You're listening to a recording from the Open Society Institute, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
Hi, I'm Steve Hubbell, and on behalf of the Open Society Fellowship Program, I'd like to welcome all of you here to a brown bag lunch with Juanita León, Open Society Fellow. And I just want to say, before I say a few words about Juanita, I want to say that when I was new to OSI and trolling the website for insights into what kind of person makes an ideal Open Society Fellow, I immediately honed in on the profile of Juanita León. Here you had a crusading Colombian journalist whose mission seemed so quixotic, so courageous, so absolutely necessary, and so profoundly ill-advised that she represented everything that my growing understanding of what an Open Society Fellow should embody was. Her project was to launch an investigative reporting website in a country riven by civil war, in a country whose elites cannot have been the least bit warm to the idea of an investigative news reporting site, roiling their waters. This was in a country with no established tradition of online journalism. This was a country in which many journalists had paid a high price for courageous reporting in the past. And she was doing so at a time when, at least up here in the United States, investigative journalism seemed to be a dying art form, a dinosaur whose extinction was imminent. And prophesied in almost every day's newspaper. She launched her website this spring, La Silla Vacía, which stands, as you all know, for the empty seat. And I can leave it to you, Juanita, to explain why that's a metaphorically rich image in Colombian society. But it is now become, after talking to Juanita, a resonant image in my own mind. And it has become required reading, as you know, for political elites, for those in the arts, for those in business, for those involved in politics as activists, as practitioners of various sorts. So in a few short months, she has created a lasting and hopefully permanent institution on the political and media scene in Colombia. I will give you a brief biographical profile. Juanita was born in Bogota. She is the daughter of an entrepreneur and a psychologist. And as we figured out together, there's something about La Silla Vacía, which seems to be the perfect dialectical intersection of psychology and entrepreneurial capitalism. I learned just a few minutes ago that the success of La Silla Vacía in Bogota has inspired her to try to take the experiment nationwide and to begin to have more of a presence throughout Colombia. I've also learned that several of the stories, which I think she will tell you about, have been picked up by mainstream media within Colombia and outside Colombia, that by focusing on corruption among political elites, the peace process, relations with the new Obama administration, which of course loom large in Colombian society, she is attracting a growing readership. And without further ado, I'd like to welcome Juanita León.
Okay, thank you, Steve, and thank you for being here. For me, it's a pleasure to be able to show the results of this great fellowship that the OSI gave me, because of course it would have been impossible for me to do this without the help of OSI, and I suppose that every time that you give a fellowship, you are kind of, it's like a lottery, right? Sometimes something comes out of it and sometimes
it's
probably doesn't.
It's
a gamble, yes. So I'm glad to show that in this case I produced the website that I had dreamed of doing. So I'm very happy with that. And I'm also very happy to talk about it, because any ideas that you have or feedback or just your questions will help me a lot to think about new things. So for those of you who don't know about it, I created La Silla Vacía as an investigative political blog to talk about how power is exercised in Colombia. One of the incentives for me to do this was to kind of realize that when you have power in a country like Colombia, that means that you choose what is written about you and what is not, or at least in which terms they write about you. So I thought, well, it would be really interesting to talk about how power is exercised, not in a formal way, but in a real way, you know, to get inside power and show how it works. On the other hand, Colombia is a country with a highly concentrated media. There are basically three groups that own all the media in the country. One is a huge economic conglomerate that owns one of the newspapers and the main TV channel and most radio stations. The other one is a family with close political links to the government. One of the owners was the Minister of Defense. The other one is the Vice President. And they own the local TV channel. They own one of the two big magazines. And the other one is another big economic group with a lot of companies in the financial system, and they also own the other TV channel. And there is another family that only owns Semana Magazine, that is the magazine that I used to work for before, which is a little bit more independent. So with that highly concentrated media environment, I thought that creating a blog would be a good way to in a way break the monopoly and try to reach a younger audience that usually feels a little bit alienated by that media concentration and by that unilateral point of view in the news. And, you know, most of the news are written from an establishment point of view with very similar interests in mind when they write. Originally, I had thought of, you know, like 5 years ago or so, I thought I want to have my own newspaper. But after being a Nieman Fellow at Harvard and being in the U.S. for 1 year and seeing the impact that blogs like Huffington Post or Politico.com or Talking Points Memo had in the election process, I realized that what I was really interested in was only like political issues. I wasn't interested in sports or celebrities, so I thought, and also that it didn't make much sense to try to get like a lot of money to do a newspaper or something that was in a way dying in its own slowly manner. So I was sure that I wanted to do something on the internet, and I kind of discovered that the blog was something that was the right size for me. You know, that I could hire a small team of reporters and do the reporting and try to investigate the topics that I was interested in. So that's how, with the help of the OSI, I created La Silla Vacía. We launched the site 3 months ago. The team is made of, all in all, we are 8 people, you know, so counting the administrative assistant, the designer, the engineer, the 3 reporters, the videographer. And what we do is that we update the site twice a day with original content. We don't do news in the sense that the president said whatever and we write about it. What we do is to try to write the story behind the news. So we try always to find an original angle that we can go deeper into and find more information about that issue, and we publish that story. And we also publish, we have a section of political gossip that has been verified. So it's just like bits of information that we update 3 times a day. And what I tried to do was to become a platform for interesting voices in the country. Because one of the things about this media concentration is that you end up always listening to the same people. No? So they appear everywhere. And what I tried to do was to open up that to new voices, to younger people, but also to people that represented other networks. I thought that the success of a project like this that didn't have like a high budget or was not backed up by a political family or an economic group was to bring along networks of people that represented large groups of different sectors of society. So I have a blog section where we have 14 bloggers that are groups of people. For example, we have 9 young economists from University of Los Andes that is, you know, they have a think tank on economic thought and they produce all the time very interesting posts for their blogs about the economy. We have the guy that was the director of the statistics department in Colombia who resigned denouncing that the government was trying to manipulate the numbers, the official numbers. So he has a blog on the numbers of power, it's called. So he just writes, he just blogs about the way numbers are used. We have a group of ex-ombudsmen and women from the two main newspapers. I mean, like, these are really kind of legendary journalists that are now like 60 years old or 70. You know, they're really veterans of journalism, and they have a blog just to criticize media, you know, like the way media is used. So we are trying to gather as many people that give legitimacy to the project, that can speak about power from different points of view, and that have their own followings. And we have another section that is called La Movida del Día, where we gave a password to power players, basically, to react to the news of the day. So we have all the presidential candidates. We have the directors of local, like regional media. We have human rights activists. We have people from the right and the left that react to a question that is related to the news of the day. And the idea behind that was that in Colombia, and I guess in the US happens the same, you tend to listen to people in the extreme right and people in the extreme left, you know, like always in the extremes about the hot issues of the day. Even though most of the country has a more centered, nuanced position on issues. But usually media, you know, because their opinions are not easily classified or are not as attractive mediatically, those voices are usually not heard. So I try to bring to that section people from all sides of society, but more to the center, not the most extreme opinions. And that has been a quite successful section because it also, you know, I guess my fear in the beginning was to have a project that could look as a university project. You know, it's easy to do something in the web and never be known by anyone and not having any impact. So I thought that bringing in these people that already had their own networks of people that already had some credibility and that had some political meaning in themselves was a good way to give weight to the project. And the other network of people that we brought to the project were artists that create political art. So we have like a permanent exhibition of political art. Every week we publish one digital piece of political art of very prestigious artists. So we ended up bringing as an audience people that usually are not that interested in a political blog, but you know, but there is a small audience that comes from the art world who like to see this kind of content. And right now we are creating, starting next week, a new section where users can provide content. we got, you know, we did like a small alliance with an NGO created by García Márquez, the writer, to improve journalism in the Americas, and they are paying for an editor of the audience. So we'll have this editor part-time coaching the audience so that the audience can produce valuable content to the site. Starting with 100 people that we sent, we invited to become super users. They are going to start uploading content to the page that will be filtered by this editor who will coach the audience so that they improve the quality of the content and will publish it in the homepage. So basically, that's the way the project works. In terms of the business model, which is usually the big question about it, we hope to be sustained by advertising. And so far, we only have one ad, but we started selling advertising only beginning this month because first we wanted to build an audience and have traffic and have something to sell. Now I'm thinking of a new source of income, and I already offered this to actually to ICTJ, because what I'm thinking is that I want to write a series of 10 articles or 12 articles about what we already know that happened during the paramilitary years in Colombia. Right now, I don't know if you know, but there is a transition process going on in Colombia where 30,000 paramilitaries and guerrillas left their arms and are now in civil society. But they are now going through a process of confessing their crimes. And there are already, say, like 2,000 testimonies of these guys saying, you know, some of them have confessed to killing more than 1,000 people, just them. So they give these confessions, and the confessions are recorded, but no one is sitting down to say, okay, what have we learned? You know, other than they killed 1,000 people each, what really do we know about how they worked together with the army, or how they worked with the business community, how they exploited the health resources, you know, things like that. So what I want to do is to sit down with a bunch of testimonies and try to do articles, like journalistic articles, saying, okay, this was the way that they worked with the pilots in the army. You know, this was the relationship, this is what verifies some of that information, and do a set of articles about the paramilitary truth or whatever. So I'm asking the ICTJ if they sponsor those articles. So what I want to do is to find some topics that I'm interested in writing about and getting some organizations to sponsor those series of articles. For example, the English embassy is very interested in environmental affairs. So, and that's a topic that I really want to work on, and that we are already writing a lot of articles about. So I want to tell them, okay, you know, sponsor 10 articles about this. You know, things that I'm interested in doing and that they are interested in also having someone write about. So we'll see if that works also as an alternative source of income, but I hired someone now to sell advertising, so I hope also that we can get some commercial advertising. And next year are the political elections in Colombia, so I also hope to get political advertising from especially the young candidates that want to reach an audience like the one I have. One of the things that have been interesting about the project and where I think that we are we differentiate ourselves from the traditional media, other than the topics that we are talking about, it's also that we have a very active community in Twitter and in Facebook. We have almost 1,000 Facebook followers and like 950 Twitter followers, but they're really active. And one way that we have found that is very helpful to get ourselves known is that when we publish a story, that we look in Facebook which groups are interested in that topic, and we post it there. And immediately, our traffic increases with the people from those groups coming to our website. In terms of the challenges that we've had, well, there are several. I think the first one for me was putting together a business, because I had been a journalist all my life. I was actually only interested, or I only knew how to write articles, go do the reporting, and that was really easy for me. But putting a business together is another thing. Now you have to think of so many things, small and big, that it's very easy to lose focus of what you want to do, but fortunately that's already in place. I think the part of getting the advertising, I was telling them that I've learned more about journalism now that I have to sell advertising than before, because the marketing directors of companies are like, oh, this is too critical of the government, and we are passing a law that, you know, we are interested in a law that the government will pass, and if they see that we sponsor a project that is critical, we might be retaliated, and so we prefer not to associate ourselves to things like that. And so I've kind of understood how difficult that part of the journalism not being of such high quality has more to do with that than with threats or censorship of other kinds, no? But I also think that it's a matter of being creative enough in the kind of campaigns that you offer them, and we'll see if that works or not. In terms of the other challenge, it has to do with the political situation in Colombia, which creates like very interesting challenges for a journalist. I had mostly covered the conflict and the internal war in Colombia in the last 10 years. And now that I'm covering politics, I've discovered that it's a lot more difficult, because when you cover the war, it's very easy to know who are the victims, who are the perpetrators, you know, who's good and who's bad. You never have doubts about it. You know, like, okay, the paramilitaries are bad, the victims are good. Now covering politics, especially in a country like Colombia, where crime and politics are so linked and intertwined, it's very difficult to move in those waters, because of course they are really good people and they do wonderful things, but the environment and the structural conditions are very murky and very difficult to understand how things move, and also because the connections between the mafias and the politicians are very subtle, and to prove them not only is difficult, but it's also kind of dangerous, because of course they have a lot to lose. So it's been interesting to go down that path and to understand better how things work. I've tried to break stories to focus on stories that traditional media sometimes cannot or doesn't do. For example, one of the stories that we have been following very closely are the ones related to tax exemptions and to gifts that the government is giving to business people and investors that are not clearly corruption, because they are done in a legal way, but people never know about them. You know, like right now the government is increasing the concession of, for example, ports. You know, like there were 60, how do you say? Yeah, ports, right? Yeah. There were 60 ports in the whole country, and this government has created 38 more. You know, and he gives them to business people with high tax exemptions, and that in a country with such high illegality like Colombia is very tricky, because they are very difficult to control. Or he's giving something that is called zona francas, that are like they can set up like a company in a place, and they immediately have a tax reduction. They pay half the taxes that they would usually pay, And usually people don't know about it. So we have been talking, we have been telling all those stories, and that has been quite interesting for the audience that usually doesn't see those kinds of stories also. Or sometimes what we do also is that we put together information that usually is never put together. So for example, I don't know if you have heard, there is a big scandal in Colombia about illegal wiretappings. The government intelligence agency wiretapped illegally and spied on human rights activists, journalists, judges, opposition leaders. So what we did was that we found all the speeches of the president saying that these opposition people and these journalists and these human rights activists were terrorists, or that they were helping the guerrillas, or he usually stigmatizes people like that. So we found all his speeches and we compared it to all the people that had been spied on. And so those are things that are not investigative in the sense that we go out and we put a lot of FOIAs or things like that, but we make connections that usually are not made by the media. Or in the last, since the referendum that he's trying to approve to get himself reelected for the second time, the president has started talking about something that is called the Estado de Opinión, like the opinion state, where he says that the opinion of the people is more important even than the laws or the judges' decisions. So no one had picked up on that. And actually it was funny because it was one of the president's aides who told me about it. You know, I just called her and said, look, I want to do like a story maybe of something good that the government is doing or something, you know, because everything I find is so critical. And she said, well, why don't you look up this thing about the state of opinion? And now he has been mentioning it a lot. And I Googled that, and he had mentioned it 103 times in the last 6 months. Immediately after they put in Congress the project to approve his re-election, he started talking about the state of opinion. So we just found all the fragments of his speeches and we put it together. And that has been picked up by like 5 columnists talking about it, because of course that's like a way to legitimate his re-election. So we have been doing those kinds of stories also, and also a lot of other political analysis and political investigations from the inside that are quite interesting. So basically that's what I'm doing, and now I don't know if you want to ask questions or know anything more.
Thank you very much, Juanita. Any questions?
Okay, well, I'll start with one. You've said this to us before, but explain to the audience, I think it'd be useful for them to know what the name of your site means.
Okay, well, it basically means the empty seat. And the reason for that is that it has become a political symbol of lack of political accountability. And it all started when the peace process with the FARC guerrilla, where the day of the inauguration of the peace process, the guerrilla top leader didn't come to the meeting, and so they left an empty seat for him. And then 5 years later, when a big political reform was being discussed, and the most controversial issue was that, you know, activists and decent people thought that the congressman that had been sentenced for having paramilitary links, they should not be replaced in Congress by his second in line. And that was called the law of the empty seat. You know, that seat should be left empty, because it didn't make sense that you get one guy into jail and his replacement comes immediately and occupies his seat. And then there was a big manifestation of the indigenous communities in Colombia that were protesting, you know, the lack of land distribution and some killings of their leaders. And And they walked through half of the country to meet with the president, and the president didn't come. So they left an empty seat for the president. So after seeing those three events, we thought that power always goes through an empty seat in Colombia, and that we wanted to have that symbol, but also that we wanted to play on the name, saying there is an empty seat for the citizens to occupy a place in politics. There is an empty seat for a new media to bring more serious information on politics. So that's a name that is interesting enough to create curiosity, but that also has a political resonance in Colombia, and we try to play with that.
Thanks. My name is Michael McCutcheon. I work in U.S. programs here. We fund a number of kind of U.S.-based, obviously, nonprofit journalism organizations, and the work you're doing is extremely impressive. My question is mostly about how you envision kind of building out the network and expanding the geographic maybe coverage beyond the capital. Your plans or envision how you envision doing that?
Yes. Definitely. Whatever is important in Colombia starts happening in like local towns, and then it builds up. And once you learn about it in Bogota, it's too late, because all these trends usually start in the regions where the armed groups are, or where the drug traffic is more prominent. And so definitely for us it is important to start building that network of collaborators at a local level. And of course there are things that conspire against it, because internet penetration in Colombia is 18%, but most of the broadband use is in the big cities. So there is one internet cafe in every town in Colombia, but the use is not as prevalent as in the big cities. And so the way that we are thinking of doing it is now that we designed a platform where people can upload articles to their own pages in the site, we're going to start traveling to different cities of Colombia and meeting with university leaders and with local journalists, inviting them to provide content to the site. So we hope with that, maybe not to reach the small town, but at least to reach like 12 big cities in Colombia that hopefully will help irradiate to the local level. On the other hand, we just signed an agreement with a company that distributes information to 18 regional newspapers in Colombia. So they are going now to publish our stories in their print local papers. And in their websites, they are just going to do a teaser and send traffic to La Silla Vacía. So it's kind of a win-win relationship where they have free content and we have their traffic. So with that, we also hope to have more exposure to the local towns. So that's how we are going to start to do it. And we hope that with opening up the participation to citizens, with that audience coach, that we're going to have training people on how to verify the information, how to write it better, how to communicate information and not only opinion. We hope to expand the reach of La Silla Vacía, but also the type of content that we can get. So far, that's what we are doing. And also, we are developing a new application so that it's easier to read La Silla Vacía on the phone. And that's something that in Colombia is changing very rapidly. People don't have access to a computer, but now everyone has a cell phone, and now cell phones are starting to get more modern and to be able to process the information, not only phone calls. So hopefully in the next 4 years, more people will be able to read it on the phone, and probably will start thinking of a way to reach them through the phone.
Um, Have you found the Facebook or Twitter networks that you all have set up to be good sources of story leads or tips or ways of rounding out the information you already have?
Yeah, we are using Twitter sometimes to gather information. We have done so far two stories just using Twitter. Three stories just using Twitter. Although with Twitter you have like a sample selection biases because the people that use Twitter are all quite similar and they are very young and really internet savvy. You know, it's not like the white population. But we were doing a story about a candidate that he presents himself as a very like a techie, you know, and very young. And so we decided that we wanted to do a story. You know, after the Obama thing, all the candidates in Colombia are kind of following Obama's steps, and they use Twitter and Facebook, but sometimes they just do it in a formal way. They don't really communicate with the users, or they just kind of post it as if it were just a one-way communication. So we decided to do a story about this candidate, and because it was how he used the technology, we decided just to do the reporting using the technology that he said that he used. So we posted in Twitter and in Facebook, and we got a lot of feedback and a lot of answers, and we built the story around that reporting, so that was quite simple. And we also did we covered a very important discussion on the day that the political reform was approved. We did it in Twitter, and that was we had like a high traffic with that. And I think it was also because it was like innovative. And then we did also another story on when the president was coming to the U.S., we had a chat on Skype with Adam Saxon and Michael Shifter and me. We had a three-way chat on Skype, and we just published that. So we are using the technologies to do some reporting, and we're trying to use them in better ways. So I think that it's a good way to start the reporting and to get some leads. And in Facebook, for example, we are using it. We have invited six of the presidential candidates to talk, to do live video chats with users in La Silla Vacía. So they come to La Silla Vacía, and we have a live video chat, and users send them questions, and he asks them, he answers them, or they answer them on video. And that has been quite good also. And the users send questions through Facebook, for example. So we sometimes use Facebook to ask questions, but it's just like the beginning of a story, not like the full reporting phase.
Juanita, since I work on the Open Society Fellowship, I have access to read your fascinating report. Mm-hmm. And Juanita did a wonderful job providing the kind of genesis of this whole project. But I have a couple of questions. When you spoke about having diverse ideological positions, as you wrote, that could interpret the news, I'd like to know first if you think that's happening right now on La Silla Vacía, if there are contrasting mm-hmm. viewpoints discussing what you're doing. And also, you made it clear that you wanted to have as a separate point a kind of news aggregation, that mm-hmm. this was certainly not going to be your focus because it would not be any comparative advantage. But do you see the news aggregation bringing visitors to the site at all?
I think that the news aggregation section that we have, we aggregate all the news from traditional media that have to do with politics. I think that's our least successful section so far, and I think that the reason for that is that since there are so few news sources in Colombia and they all kind of have the same point of view and the same information, we end up repeating a lot of the same. You know, it's just like El Tiempo. It's mostly El Tiempo, Semana, and El Espectador. And sometimes they have even exact headlines. So I think some people use it. I mean, I have some people told me that they use it, people that work, for example, in the polls companies. The companies that make polls, the pollsters. They just check it because it's easier to check it at La Silla Vacía than to go to El Tiempo, El Espectador, and Semana, but it ended up not having that much added value, so we're now discussing how useful it is, and we're thinking if it would be more useful to aggregate the blogs community, but then the blogs community is not developed enough, and it's mostly opinion and not very good opinion. So we are discussing how to make it more interesting. What has been interesting about that section is when international papers talk about Colombia, because we are the only ones that aggregate that information. But we don't have much traffic in that section, so that's not so successful. In terms of the variety of opinions, I think we have achieved that quite well. In La Movida del Día, where these political players react to the news of the day, it's very interesting to see the guy that is really pro-Uribe and the guy from the left, and we haven't been able to get them to discuss with each other. You know, each of them posts their opinion, but they usually do not reply to the opinion of the last one, or, you know, they don't talk among each other, but at least you see all the opinions together. And I think if just from an aesthetic point of view, it's very interesting to see them to get their pictures together, because also that I think that although most people think that we are critical of the government, no one thinks that we are aligned with any party, which is good, and I think that section has been quite useful also for that. And in terms of our bloggers, we have bloggers that are very, you know, highly critical of the government, and we have other that is quite conservative and very pro-government. So we are having like an interesting debate community in terms of our users, for example. It's very interesting to see, because they do debate among each other, something that usually doesn't happen in the other and the rest of the media. Most people that enter to comment, they insult the blogger, or they just criticize, you know, they insult the president, or they insult the opposition. For some reason, I don't know if because we are very new or because we make people sign in before posting their comments, that they are really respectful and they do debate among each other, which is very interesting. Yeah.
Juanita, I just have a quick question. You mentioned that the blogging community is still very, it's developing, it's
yeah.
not very developed yet. When you are trying to sell your site, your blog, as a source of information, not just to audiences, but to political elites, do you have to sell it, or have they already recognized the power of new media, and are they coming to you?
Well, in the beginning, I had to sell it, but I never sell it as a blog. I always say that I'm a political newspaper, because blogs seem to not to be respected as much. And in the beginning, when we were trying to do a story, we had to say, you know, I'm from La Silla Vacía, I used to work for Semana Magazine. It was like we said it very fast, because, of course, in the beginning they were, what, the empty seat, what is that? And they didn't really know about it, but we had a very successful launching strategy that I think helped us a lot, and it was that we didn't have money to do like a big launch, right, like a big party or anything like that. So what we decided to do was to invite young staffers from Congress and young advisors to the ministers and people, like young people from the planning department and from the poster companies and, you know, from different audiences and researchers and human rights activists, but mostly people in their 30s. We invited them for small breakfast sessions to tell them about the project and to get their feedback. So they felt, you know, like usually people never call the staffers, they just call the congressmen. And so they were really proud that they had been consulted, and they felt that somehow they were part of the project in that way. And that was very useful to get them interested, so that they would tell their bosses. And so sometimes when we want to talk to the congressman or whatever, we call the staffer and they go like, oh, wait, I'll pass you. So that was in the beginning. But now they, you know, we don't even have to explain anything. They are there, and the fact that the presidential candidates have come to La Silla Vacía for the video chats has also given us, it's become cool to do it. So now some, like the presidential candidates that are not there, you know, that they don't have as much chance as the others, are now calling us. I mean, they call us to say, hey, we would like to go to La Silla Vacía. You know, the press officers call us. And so we feel that we have been gaining a lot of credibility among the political community, at least.
I'd like to ask a question about the structure of organized crime in Colombia and the mechanics of covering it. I'm assuming that organized crime is structured around narcotic, the drug trade.
Yes.
And I assume that any effort to cover that as an investigative reporter is potentially hazardous. You're certainly running into a lot of resistance from political officials and anybody who has any involvement in that. And if it's a pervasive problem, what have you done to, what kind of strategies have you used to try to overcome the wall of silence that surrounds organized crime?
Yeah, that is very difficult, and I haven't done so far stories that say, you know, I mean, because the drug rings are very difficult to penetrate, you know, like there are a lot of baby cartels that run the business, and what happened was that those cartels financed or reproduced these paramilitary groups, and then these paramilitary groups got these politicians elected. So the politicians are not linked directly to the drug cartels, but through the paramilitaries. You know, I mean, they're all part of the same system, but so I've written about the links of the politicians to the paramilitary groups. And initially when I was in Semana, that I was one of the first ones to write about those links of the politicians to the paramilitary, the way we broke that there's a social researcher called Claudia Lopez who found all these atypical electoral results, like in towns where no one ever voted or only 20% of people voted, suddenly 99% of people voted. And they all voted for the same candidate that they had never gotten any votes in those towns. So she found those atypical results, and I went to the towns and I did the reporting, and so we put that together, and that was very successful. And now 85 of them are being investigated, 9 have already been sentenced, and that was like a huge political scandal. So I've been still following, you know, those trials and all that information that is coming out of that. On the other hand, there is another scandal that I broke one of those stories that has to do with the way the first re-election of the president was approved. Because what he did was they offered a lot of jobs to those politicians so that they would change the vote and vote for his re-election. So the story that I broke was about the ambassador to Brazil who got that job after changing his vote in the re-election. So that was, I talked to the guy who was fired to put like a crony of the politician in that job. So a friend of mine had met him and he convinced him to talk to me and he told me about it, and then I just crossed all the information and all the jobs that he had gotten, that he was offered for his political party so that he would change the job, the vote. So that's how we did that story, that has been very much seen. And I was talking to the president of the Supreme Court and he was like, oh, that helps us a lot to advance the... Because they had not a formal investigation against him, but they were doing like the previous research to open up the investigation. So he told me, like, now that you published the story, we are... Like, they used some of the information of my story to open up the formal investigation. So that's cool, yeah. But I'm not really... I haven't really done, like, the really, really dangerous stories of linking it to the drug cartel as such, because I don't have that many good sources in the police, and they're the ones that really know how the cartels work in the inside. I'm not sure I want to know that because that is really dangerous. Yeah.
And investigative reporting is also expensive. You have to develop contacts over time.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of contacts in different places because I have so many years as a journalist in Colombia, but to do those stories about drugs, you have to really have very good sources in the intelligence community and in the police community, and I don't. So.
Just gonna say I'm really glad to hear about the blog, and I'm very happy also to hear that there is some sort of dialogue going on between people, because that's what has been notoriously been lacking in Latin America, yeah. In Colombian media. It's remarkable actually how we insult each other rather than to talk to each other in the response columns in the newspapers. So I'm very happy to hear that at least, you know, starting somewhere. I have two questions. One, what has been your interaction with the Uribe government, or what has been the Uribe government's reaction to the blog? Has there been one? I mean, I know it's been 3 months, but I'm just curious because he's notorious for barking at people that do not agree with him. And my second question is, I would like to know a bit more about that work with that NGO that you mentioned that educates people, because I think, I mean, in addition to obviously getting politicians talking to each other, I think it's very important also that people talk to each other, do not insult each other, but actually, you know, hear each other's opinions. Yeah. And I was wondering whether that's part of the job that you do, and if not, whether you intend to do it.
Okay. Well, about the Uribe government, they have mostly ignored us in terms of, you know, we have run a lot of stories. We call them for their opinion or their point of view, and they usually don't have an opinion, don't answer. Even though, you know, I have a good relationship with one of his advisors, and I call him, and he always answers, and he says, like, I don't know about it, or we don't have an opinion. So finally, after 3 months of, like, driving the press officer crazy and actually getting almost into a... See, because they have received this... There was a scandal where they received it was actually like a hitman in the house of the president, a paramilitary guy that allegedly had information against the court that is investigating this parapolitical scandal. And the press officer received him, and his excuse for receiving him was that, you know, here we have the doors open to whoever wants to talk to us. And I had been calling him for 3 months and never answering my phone. So I finally said, like, look, do I have to have, like, a criminal record for you to open up the doors to me? So finally, because I thought that he had resigned, and so I was like, okay, I have nothing to lose. And then he didn't resign, but finally he received me. And we talked, and he was very nice, and he was like, yeah, you know, we are going to talk to La Silla Vacía, and you can have any information that you want. But that was it, and they never, you know, the government is famous for not giving you any information that is public information. So what we're doing is that we are recording all the FOIAs that they have rejected, and we're going to run a story on the lack of access that you have to public information in Colombia, because it's terrible. So basically they have ignored us, they have not barked at us anyways, but we have two of his close advisors belong to La Movida del Día, and they sometimes they participate quite often in La Movida del Día, not as representatives of the government, but as their personal opinions. So that's good, but it's very hard to get an answer from them. But mostly what they love to do is to leak information that they're interested in, and they usually never reply the information that you need, not to La Silla Vacía, but to anyone. So, but yeah, no, so far we haven't gotten into problems with them. And in terms of this organization, the García Márquez organization, is called La Fundación Nuevo Periodismo Iberoamericano. It's a Latin American NGO that is incredibly useful, and it has been really good to improve journalism in the Americas. They do a lot of trainings, and now they were more based on narrative journalism and literary journalism, like print journalism. But now they are seeing that with this internet revolution, they really have to catch up and get more involved in how to improve electronic journalism. So they were interested in this experience because it was like a pilot project where they could learn lessons on how to train the audience in the future. If I see myself as a way of teaching people anything, not really. I feel that if I can do better journalism than most people are doing, that would be enough, and giving information. What I do think is that if you really want the audience to participate, you have to treat them as if they were real reporters. So you have to edit them, you have to train them in that sense. So I see it more as a way to really incorporate the audience into your, how do you say, sala de reacción, into your newsroom. So I want to be able to treat them as I treat my reporters, but I wouldn't have time to train them myself, so that's why we got this audience coach that will do.
Compared to the audience that responds to Semana, I'm just curious to know, because I actually stopped reading some Colombian newspapers because it was just the level of insulting that was going on was way too much for me. So compared to, for example, the responses that Del Tiempo or Semana get, how has been the interaction of the audience in your blog? Has
it's such a mystery for us because of course a lot less people comment La Silla Vacía than Semana, so maybe that's one of the reasons. But it's amazing how civilized and smart our people are. You know, they really interact with each other, they comment, they bring new information, they say, you know, you should check out this link, and they talk to each other as civilized people. I don't know if it's because we only have politics, so we tend to attract more like a professional audience, since we don't have soccer and those things that maybe. And also I think that the way we treat topics is not very polarized, is not polarized in a way, so the reaction of the audience is more complex. Or maybe just because we're starting, and also we've only had to veto one of the commenters because he was insulting, I think, I don't know, he was using bad words, so we blocked him. But other than that, we don't even have to filter them. I don't know, you have to read them because it's very interesting, and I'm not sure why that is. Yeah.
Shall we take one more question?
Okay, I was going to ask. I'm Lee Hollingby from the library, so thank you for a very interesting presentation. So what do you see as the natural sources of advertising for your site?
Yes. I think that the most natural source of advertising for us will be in the next year when the congressional election and the presidential election and the election for mayors and governors start. I think that if I were a politician, this would be like a place where I definitely would advertise, because anyone that reads us is interested in politics. So that's one. I think that companies that want to reach the technocrat community and the opinion leaders and people in government, so companies that are interested in doing business with government officials, also people that want to create a better opinion of themselves to the opinion leaders, because since we are being read by journalists, you know, we are definitely being read by political journalists, by people. So that's a company. And I think people that have products for high-tech professionals, you know, I think the computer companies, mostly software developers, those kinds of companies are interesting. I don't think that we would be very interesting for massive products like Coca-Cola or things like that. I think that for them it's much better to advertise in a big circulation newspaper, because we are definitely a niche publication, I think. I think also we're trying to reach now universities, for example, that they are advertising all the time seminars, new MBA programs. I think that's a target where they would be interested in advertising in our site. But I will tell you for sure in 6 months when we get any ads. Yeah.
Thank you very much for that, Juanita. That was most informative. And thanks to all of you for coming.